Imagine waking up to a timber wolf howling outside your bedroom window, not in the distant wilderness, but in suburban Connecticut. This was daily life for Jack Douglas, his Japanese wife Riko, and their two young sons in the early 1970s. Their household already defied suburban norms, with a 200-pound mountain lion named Pussycat, an Alaskan Malamute called Chibi, and a tiny Pomeranian aptly named Doggy. Yet Jack felt something was missing, a timber wolf to complete his vision of total bliss. When Jack brought home a wolf puppy as a Mother's Day present, Riko's response was unequivocal. "I think I go back to Japan." Her retaliation, putting soy sauce on his apple pie, marked the beginning of an uneasy truce. The wolf puppy's integration was anything but smooth. He had accidents throughout their historic home and developed a fondness for destroying Riko's clothes. After much debate about naming him, rejecting cute names as unsuitable for an animal destined to look regal, they settled on the simplest solution, Wolf. As Wolf grew, he left his mark on their home. Supposedly built in 1769 by iron mine tycoon Ezekiel Pettibone, his teeth marks adorned every newel post, mantelpiece, and door. When Jack found Wolf destroying the kitchen door, he wisely followed the Bronx Zoo curator's advice. Never try to take a kitchen door away from a full-grown timber wolf. Every morning, Jack braved walking Wolf through the Connecticut hills. On rare, peaceful days, Wolf behaved gently, taking Jack's hand softly between his fangs, as if reassuring him that the wolves of the world had everything under control. Most walks, however, were grueling tests against Wolf's practice attacks. The powerful animal would circle him relentlessly, slashing at his pants legs. Jack's only defense was grabbing Wolf's mouth, which gave the animal momentary pause. Wolf developed health problems when his back legs began failing, a condition like rickets from improper diet. Jack changed Wolf's food and performed physical therapy. Despite his disability, Wolf showed remarkable determination, once escaping through a window to visit Chibi, proving his resilience. Social situations were particularly challenging. Jack felt treated as a freak for having a wolf. At Bobby's school pet show, chaos erupted until a little girl befriended Wolf with Fig Newtons, and Jack paid her for cookies to lure Wolf back to the car. Jack's extraordinary affinity for wild animals stemmed from his unusual upbringing. His mother had raised diverse creatures, rabbits she couldn't sell for slaughter, chinchillas, Siamese cats, experimental mice, rattlesnakes for venom, and unpredictable German Shepherd guard dogs. As a boy, Jack trapped muskrats for fur, an act he now regretted. His relationship with animals had evolved to where he avoided killing even ants. He'd developed a deep belief in nature's divinity while paradoxically holding human life rather cheaply due to overpopulation concerns. A pivotal moment occurred in southwest Texas at a ghost town called Riverbend. There, a man named Joe maintained 15 African lions rescued from a bankrupt circus. Despite financial struggles, he refused to part with any lions, explaining simply, "I guess I just love them, and that's not going to end." Jack recognized this same inexplicable bond in his own attraction to wolves. The Honansville Ecology Group provided comic relief alongside Jack's serious conservation efforts. Their meetings showcased well-meaning but eccentric neighbors with peculiar environmental concerns. The Crassels, watercolor artists, brought sketches of endangered birds and proposed painting warning signs in earth tones, not realizing birds can't interpret human art. Antique shop owners Virgil and Reggie obsessed solely over their store's squirrel Winston and his territorial disputes. Bella Brown, the women's lib leader in permanent overalls, punctuated arguments by spitting tobacco juice into her coffee can. Meanwhile, the wealthy Dotsons wrote generous checks while suggesting impractical ideas like releasing pandas into local woods, convinced they would naturally adapt. These gatherings typically devolved into social events more concerned with potluck disagreements than environmental action. Yet, despite their ineffectiveness, the group represented an important shift in suburban consciousness, a growing awareness that expansion threatened natural habitats. As Wolf matured, Jack wrestled with his conscience. Despite his joy in this magnificent animal, he knew keeping a wild creature captive was unfair. After a failed hunting lesson, Jack confessed to Ryko he couldn't release Wolf alone. She suggested finding him a mate. This aligned with conservation practices of releasing wolf families into wilderness reserves, as family responsibility would better activate the male's hunting instincts than solitude. The search led Jack to Old Lady Simpson's place, where he was surprised to find not an elderly woman, but a stunning 31-year-old with copper-red hair. The property was named after her grandmother. Jack acquired a female wolf named Lady. Wolf and Lady bonded, and soon Lady had 5 pups. Wolf growled when Jack checked on them, but didn't bite, seeming to understand Jack's concern for his family. By 14 days, the pups' eyes opened, though they remained nearly blind. 2-year-old Timothy named them Dancer, Prancer, Dunder, Blitzen, and Wolfie, names the family adopted. The plan to release Wolf, Lady, and their pups centered on Lost Lake in the Canadian wilderness. The journey involved a tense border crossing and challenges finding wolf-friendly lodging. In Chinookville, transferring the wolves to Charlie Burke's seaplane proved difficult. Wolf resisted fiercely. Jack used a chicken to coax him out, then dragged him up a springy ramp. When Wolf fell between the pontoon and plane, Jack carefully retrieved him using his chain leash. At Lost Lake, Jack settled the wolves on a larger island with caves and game. Initially hesitant, they soon explored thoroughly, sniffing every detail. During their month-long stay, the wolves caught small game, supplemented by dog food and chicken. Their bodies hardened significantly, muscles becoming like steel springs. Their peace ended when Charlie's plane arrived with the Honansville Ecology Group. Spooked by the noisy crowd, the wolves retreated to vegetation in caves, appearing only in occasional glimpses. November 1st arrived, the day Jack released Wolf, Lady, and their pups into the wild. Though hesitant, seeing their happiness on the island convinced him they couldn't be confined again. They moved the pups first to a pine-covered peninsula on the mainland, then towed Wolf and Lady swimming behind their boat across the half-mile lake. The family reunion was joyous, pups wriggling and nuzzling their parents with excitement. As Jack's family departed, snow began falling. Their final glimpse of the wolves, Wolf standing proudly with Lady beside him, and the 5 pups forming a semicircle behind, was both beautiful and heartbreaking in the gathering darkness. This scene embodied the central tension of Jack's relationship with Wolf, the desire to protect versus the imperative to allow natural freedom. In releasing them, Jack acknowledged that true love sometimes means letting go. His story reminds us that all creatures share a fundamental desire for freedom, family, and home.